When I think of civil rights is what we think of when we think of Martin Luther King, right? When you think of civil rights, what's the image that comes to your mind? Marches, right? Marches, up, you know, signs, walking up and down the streets, sit-ins, those kinds of things. One of the things that Martin Luther King would carry on with him when he traveled from town to town to lead these marches and lead this movement, well, he had usually had two books with him. He always had a copy of his Bible with him. I actually stopped in the, got to see his Bible at the King Institute there in Atlanta. And so he always had that with him. You could tell it was been in his pocket for a while. It was well-worn, well-used. The other book that he had with him is a book that was written by a guy called Howard Thurman, another Reverend Doctor, Howard Thurman, and it was a book called Jesus and the Disinherited. And Howard Thurman was one of Martin Luther King's teachers when King was at Boston University in graduate school. And he always thought of Howard Thurman as a mentor. And there are some people who call Howard Thurman the godfather of the civil rights movement. That he was one of the sources of spiritual inspiration for lots of the leaders of that movement. If you look at the pictures back, you know, all those marches and things, you won't find a picture of Howard Thurman. His role in this wasn't to go out into the street. He did something different. He concentrated on his teaching. He concentrated on his preaching. And he also concentrated on founding the very first intentionally interracial congregation in California. In San Francisco, which is where his papers are, much of his papers are now. He was a minister and a teacher, and I think that that book, I think the reason why King was hauling it around all the time, carrying it with him all the time, was because it was about Jesus and Christianity, but it was about how that mattered to, as Thurman put it, it mattered to people with their backs against the wall. The people with their backs against the wall, it's if it doesn't matter to them, what use is it? So this was, in this book, he was trying to describe how it is that you could understand the teachings of Jesus as relevant to the present moment. As I've been reading him, that's kind of a something that I keep touching on is like what he's concerned about is people being able to live where they are in the life that they're in, to not lie about it, to see the truth about it, to be able to analyze how it works. Like in his book, Jesus and the Disinherited, he goes through how does fear work? How does fear get created in oppressive systems? And he goes through and kind of outlines how that happens. And he looks at other different mechanisms for the way oppressive systems work. And then he talks about how that theology, his theology of Jesus, that the message of Jesus gives resources to enable people to live through hard times and to be present to the truth of what's going on in the country, in their community, and in their own heart. And I think the main thing that Howard Thurman wanted people to know was that everyone is a child of God. Everyone is a child of God, he would say. He understood, I think, that what racism and what white supremacy culture does is it tries to get people to forget that you have inherent worth. It tries to make you forget that you have inherent worth. It works really well if you buy this, then you'll be worthy. Like that message works really well in this system. Right? Or if you can connect me to somebody else, if there's some sort of transaction I can get out of this, that's what works in the oppressive system. It's countercultural, and it's, as Howard Thurman understood it, Jesus' message that, no, you are a child of God and worthy right now. You have inherent worth and dignity. And if you can have faith in that, you can be present now. In his autobiography, Howard Thurman tells a story about the first time he had to explain racism to his two daughters. He lived in Daytona Beach. That's where he was born. That's where he grew up. They were in Daytona Beach, and his daughters wanted to visit a playground, and this playground was designated at the time for white children only. This is probably in the 50s sometime. You can imagine him at the boundaries of that playground. The daughters are turned up to their father and say, "Why can't we play there?" So what would your answer be? How would you respond? How would you respond? Here's how Howard Thurman responded. He said, "It's against the law for us to use those swings, even though it is a public school. At present, only white children can play there. But it takes the state legislature, the courts, the sheriffs and policemen, the white churches, the mayors, the banks and businesses, and the majority of white people in the state of Florida. It takes all of those people to keep two little black girls from swinging on those swings. That is how important you are. Never forget. The estimate of your own importance and self-worth can be judged by how many weapons and how much power people are willing to use to control you and keep you in the place they have assigned to you. You are two very important little girls. Your presence can threaten the entire state of Florida. You have inherent worth. You are a person of significance and importance. You are special." Howard Thurman seemed always trying to connect to that truth, ways to remember that. He said, "The awareness of being a child of God tends to stabilize the ego and results in a new courage, fearlessness, and power. I have seen it happen again and again." He says, "When I was a youngster, this was drilled into me by my grandmother." His grandmother was born during the time of slavery, so she was born enslaved and would tell stories now and then of her experiences during that time. On the plantation where she was, there was a slave minister who came to hold secret religious meetings with his fellow black people there. And Howard Thurman just used to get sort of caught up in this story of this, the minister being sneaking in, the message of that he would give, the way he would have people's attention just kind of wrapped up. And then at the end, Howard says, "Everything in me quivered with pulsing tremor of raw energy when, at the end of her story, she would come to the triumphant climax of the minister. 'You are not that word that they used to refer to you. That is not who you are. You are not slaves. You are God's children.'" And maybe that's a message that we might expect from someone who's thought of often as a Christian mystic like Howard Thurman. But I want to tell a couple other stories that talk about sort of other ways that Howard Thurman tried to kind of connect with that truth. I think one of the things that Howard Thurman always tried to do is maintain his faith in people. Like, that's a corollary of this. Everyone is a child of God, so you've got to maintain your faith in people despite what's going on. He had a couple of experiences, I think, that enforced that belief for him. When he was growing up, this is segregated Florida, so he was going to the school for the black kids, and the school there went through the seventh grade. You had to graduate eighth grade in order to get into high school. Sneaky. The principal, who was also named Howard, Principal Howard, was so impressed by Howard Thurman that he said, "You know, I'm going to, on my own time, privately, I'm going to teach you the eighth grade this next year." And he came to the end of the year and said to the superintendent, "I've got a young black boy here who's past the eighth grade." Superintendent says, "Well, prove it. Make him sit down with me and take the test." Passed. Totally impressed. So he's going to go on to the high school. Now, the high school, there's not many schools around, so there's no local school that a young black person like Howard Thurman could attend. So he has to go to Jacksonville, Florida, which means he has to take the train to get there. So he's going to spend a bunch of time away from home. So he's got to pack his stuff up. And in order to do that, he borrows an old trunk from somebody. No lock on the trunk, no handles on the trunk. He stuffs his stuff into it and then takes rope and ties up the trunk so that stuff doesn't fall out. Says goodbye to his family. He walks on down to the train station, walks up to the ticket counter, and the agent at the ticket counter asks him what he wants, and he buys a ticket for Jacksonville, and he's going to check his bag so that his bag can go along with him to Jacksonville. And the agent says, nope, no. The regulation says that the baggage check has to be attached to the handle of your luggage, and that doesn't have a handle on it. That's rope. Rope is not a handle. So you can send it, but you'll have to send it express, so that's $3 more. And after paying for his ticket, Howard Thurman had about a dollar in his pocket in coins. And so he gets turned away from the counter. He takes his roped-up trunk with him, sits down, and just starts to weep, tears running down his face on the steps of the train station. And at one point, he opens his eyes, and in front of him on the floor, on the ground in front of him, he sees a pair of work shoes, a large pair of work shoes. So his eyes crawl up, and it's a black man dressed in overalls and wearing a denim cap. And the man looks down at Howard and says, "Why are you crying so hard?" And Howard tells him what happened. Can't send this luggage along, can't afford it. The man thinks for a minute, scratches his chin, and then says, "Well, if you're trying to get out of this lousy town so that you can get an education, the least I can do is help you. So come with me." And so they walk back to the ticket agent. The man takes a small rawhide bag out of his pocket. That's where he's got his coins. He counts out the coins that are needed to pay for the trunk to get sent to express so that it'll arrive in Jacksonville with Howard. The ticket agent hands the receipt to this man. He turns and hands it right away off to Howard. And then he turns and walks off, disappears down the railroad track, and Howard Thurman never saw him again. Never learned his name, never knew who he was. When Howard Thurman came to write his autobiography, the dedication of his autobiography says, "To the stranger in the railroad station at Daytona Beach who restored my broken dream 65 years ago." Gotta have faith in people. I'm going to tell you one more story about Howard Thurman, and that's something that was new to me that I hadn't run across before. When I was reading his autobiography, I was, I wasn't expecting it, I guess. But he talks a lot about how he had a connection with nature, and this connecting with nature was something that was really important to him. He says, "When I was young, I found more companionship in nature than I did among people. The woods befriended me." He thought of the nighttime as a companion, that the darkness was something that he felt safe to, that when the day didn't work out so well, at nighttime he could just lay it all out into the night and to the stars and feel held and feel like, oh, I can talk about it here. He tells a story about riding out a storm. Now, I don't know how wise this was to stay outside during a big storm in Florida. I'm glad he was okay. He talks about there's a steady quieting, a lull during which the waves seemed to lack the strength to wash fully up the shore. The seagrass along the top of the dunes was still. No wind blew in the treacherous quiet. Then a stirring, like a gentle moan, broke the silence. Suddenly the winds were ferocious, and the waves, now 10 feet high, dashed into the shore. Again, the boundaries of the self did not hold me. He's talking about what it feels like his experience of nighttime. The boundaries of the self did not hold me. Unafraid, I was held by the storm's embrace. The experience of these storms gave me a certain overriding immunity, against much of the pain with which I would have to deal in the years ahead when the ocean was only a memory. The sense held, I felt rooted in life, in nature, in existence. When the storms blew, the branches of the large oak tree in our backyard would snap and fall, but the topmost branches of the oak tree would sway, giving way just enough to save themselves from snapping loose. I needed the strength of that tree, and like it, I wanted to hold my ground. Eventually, I discovered that the oak tree and I have a unique relationship. I could sit my back against the trunk and feel the same peace that would come to me in my bed at night. I could reach down in the quiet places of my spirit, take out my bruises and my joys, unfold them, and talk about them. I could talk aloud to the oak tree and know that I was understood. It, too, was part of my reality, like the woods, the night, the pounding surf, my earliest companions, giving me peace. When he left home to go to school and beyond, Howard Thurman always made sure to visit at least once or twice a year, and there were two things that he connected with every visit. One was his grandmother. He always made sure that he sought and talked for a few hours with his grandmother. And the other thing that he would do, he says, on each visit, I would go to my oak tree to lean against it for an intense moment of past intimacy. When you open up Howard Thurman's autobiography, there's a section of pictures in it. And of course, it's full of pictures of him, pictures of his family, pictures of places that where he taught and things like that. Lots of pictures of people. The first picture is a picture of the oak tree. The first picture is a picture of the oak tree. You are a child of God. You are special and important. What is it that helps to remind you that that's true for you? Is there an oak tree that you lean against, that you sit up against? Is there a Jesus story that gives you reassurance? You are a child of God. Is there a grandmother, an elder, a friend who helps you remember that? Is there a pet that you have that helps you remember that? You are special and worthy. I think that ultimately what Howard Thurman wants is for all of us to be able to connect to that person or that place or that critter, that story that helps us to remember that we're all of us inherently worthy, that we're all children of God. And that way, even in a world where things are hard, we're able to be present now.